My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, all, and welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast. This is Michael Bailey with me round the table here to discuss the Belgian Grand Prix. A spartacular, wasn't it, David?
I have. Thanks for bringing that up.
It's David Tillier, editor of Gridwalk.tv, and Perry Hamilton here, my erstwhile sidekick, which is the one I've decided I like.
I will settle for sidekick because it's preceded by erstwhile, which I like. I like the sort of old timey sound of that.
It is the caveat.
Yes, that's what I will allow it.
Gentlemen, how are we? Are we well? And did we enjoy the action at the weekend?
Yeah, fantastic. Really enjoyed it. Great race.
Yep, full of highlights. As David said, watching the highlights would take as long as the whole race, because the whole race was one big highlight. Mm-hmm. Absolutely cracking.
One long special. Brilliant. Okay, well, Formula One back in style after its prolonged summer break. It must be said, Jenson Button dominant all weekend, but I think we should probably start with the start. It's the talking point, the key talking point from the weekend. Started the Grand Prix, they didn't make it past the first corner. Romain Grosjean in his Lotus pushed a little bit too hard and a little bit too much into Lewis Hamilton, and then kind of got projected into the air over Fernando Alonso's cockpit, and a massive smash ensued. We had a lot of safety car action. It sent Lewis and Fernando out of the race, and I think, was it Sergio Perez as well?
And Romain, of course.
So too. Lost. And a lot of damage along the way. Carbon fiber everywhere. So many issues to describe and talk about off the back of that accident. I suppose first let's talk about the blame, because it was apportioned to Romain. He has been given a one race ban, which to me seems quite an unprecedented move, almost, in a way. He won't race for Lotus in Italy at Monza this coming weekend. He also got a 50,000 euro fine, which is sort of like the sort of underline along with the ban. Do we have sympathy for Romain, or is that pretty much what that kind of recklessness, I suppose you could say, deserved?
It's interesting because people don't talk about Romain Grosjean in the same breath as they talk about Pastor Maldonado, and maybe they should. Seven starts this season have ended with Romain Grosjean going out and either taking someone with him or going out on his own, and that's the majority. That's over half of these races, and that's not what Lotus are paying him to do.
The amount of times we've talked about Romain having a first lap accident.
Yeah,
on this podcast,
that's it. And but when he's talked about as being dangerous, no one mentions him in the same way that they talk about, you know, Pastor Maldonado, who again found himself in some difficulty this race as well. I mean, it was sort of a twofer for us on that front, really. But I think it comes from different places. I have nothing to back this up other than opinion, unfortunately, but from what you can see and from what you hear of them in the media, Romain's comes from a real drive to perform and be better and just to race and go as fast as he can, and sometimes he gets ahead of himself, and that can be quite dangerous. I mean, and also you look at who your teammate is, you know, your Kimi Raikkonen, former world champion, everyone knows he's fast. The car is known to be fast, the team are expecting big things, and maybe in his, you know, first proper season in Formula One, not just coming in to spell another driver, but his first real season behind the wheel where everything's geared up for him, maybe that could be a little bit too much for the guy, possibly. Whereas with Maldonado, you kind of, I don't know, everything he seems to do seems to be a kind of petty in many ways, like smashing into Perez at Monaco. We all saw how well documented that was. And he always seems to be in the wars as well, but he kind of comes out and says to the media, well, that's my way I drive, and, you know, if you guys have a problem with it, so be it, but I'm still going to drive the way I drive. It kind of smacks of the way Lewis Hamilton was last year, but the difference is Lewis Hamilton's got boatloads more experience than either of these guys. And Hamilton had proven before that, those incidents, that he could be a world champion, he could be a world-class driver, and he still is. And obviously it's proof that a driver who is in the wars a lot one season can turn it around the next. But, I mean, both Romain and Pastor are really going to need to sort it out. But, I mean, to say it's all Romain's fault, there's nothing that can really go against that when you look at the replays and you look at how he did force Lewis over to the other side of the road. But I mean, it's tight. It's kind of, I would say it borders on being a racing incident, but a racing incident that Romain Grosjean could have avoided.
You see, this is my issue. I mean, the initial movement of Romain over to the right, just into Lewis, that kicked this whole thing off, didn't seem that unusual to what you see in most starts, in a way. Obviously, the after effect of that was incredibly traumatic, and in a way, as they kept saying in the coverage, it's sort of racing gods at that point, isn't it, as to where everyone ends up and who gets missed, and obviously sometimes it goes horrifically wrong, but it just seemed like it wasn't necessarily, the contact wasn't anything necessarily different to what you would see when in those situations, but what happened afterwards maybe underlined, you know, how dangerous the sport can be more than anything.
Yeah, I think, well, let's just be straight here. It was Roman's fault. There's no getting away from that. It was his fault. I think the race ban is harsh because it is, as Perry said, more like a racing incident. You know, you've got to bear in mind that they've just started the race. Grosjean's going to be focusing on that first corner, which is a pretty manic first corner of all of the tracks on the calendar. It's probably, I would say, the tightest first corner, and definitely, you know, historically has had the most accidents. So you're kind of focusing on that corner, you're trying to get the right line and what have you. Hamilton was up the inside. He should have known that Hamilton was there. I'm not defending him at all. Should have known that Hamilton was there, but you can kind of see how it happened. Then obviously with regards to sort of how it clipped Hamilton, it could have in any other race might well have just taken Hamilton out, maybe Hamilton and Grosjean, but because of what happened, Hamilton ended up sort of stuck to his rear wing and they both basically became projectiles. Hamilton's front wheels actually were off the ground before they hit the guys getting thrown through the front corner, and it was just sort of mayhem ensued. But the thing that's made me really angry out of all of this is the fact that it's brought up this whole closed cockpit debate again, which I can kind of understand where they're coming from, but it's an open cockpit formula, always has been. And if you're going to start covering over cockpits and then covering over wheels, then it may as well just be GT racing. So, you know, the open cockpit part of it is fundamental to the sport, and it's frustrating when they keep bringing that up.
No, I agree. You've got to be able to do everything you can to maintain maintain driver safety. But, you know, it's an old adage, it's not ballet. The guys who are out there know what they're getting into. They'll tell you there's no greater thrill than being out there in one of those cars. That's what they're after. You know, Kimi Raikkonen left to go and drive closed cockpit in rally. He's come back. You know, this is obviously the main draw. It's the biggest motorsport in the world. It's the most exhilarating motorsport in the world, and not just for the crashes that we see. I mean, as an audience, yeah, that's what gets you out of your seat, but it also does get you genuinely concerned. They've made great strides in safety. It's amazing to see that all of those guys walked away unharmed. I mean, there was a bit of concern for Alonso when he stayed in the car for as long as he did, but you can attribute that down to shock. I mean, a massive, you know, for the second year in a row, he's been shunted off the track at the first corner by a Lotus. So, although last year you could get technical and say it was a Lotus Renault, but closing the cockpit is an absolutely ridiculous idea in terms of this particular formula of motorsport. I agree with you there, David.
But is it inevitable? Yeah, are we going to see this happening? I've already said there'll be safety improvements for 2014, and that we've already, I'm sure, seen drawings of how cars could look and these sort of things. They've tested the sort of front I don't know what the technical term is now, but a sort of a front protective frame for the driver.
There's all sorts of bits and pieces of technology that they've kind of talked about and tried out, and we don't really know what's coming until the FIA finally decide on it. You know, even with the engines that were supposed to be coming in 2014, that all changed at the last minute, and you know, they weren't going to be V6s, they were going to be 1.6 litre straight fours or something stupid like that. Line four, rather. So, you know, you never really know what's going to happen. I don't think it's inevitable. I think there are quite a few people that are pushing for it. I think it would be a shame because that's part of the draw of F1 over a tin top series, is that you do get to see the driver in there at work, you know, whether it's from the cameras inside the vehicles or from the cameras outside the track, you can actually see a person. So therefore, you're kind of cheering on a person. You can support an individual, as opposed to, you know, GT racing is not quite the same. I mean, I was at Silverstone just the other weekend, and they had tons of cars going round and round and round, and each car has at least two or three people that share the car over the course of a six-hour period. I had no idea at any one time who was in that car. And, you know, I was able to cheer on a team, but I wasn't able to sort of, you know, get behind a driver. And that's one of the things, one of the fundamental things about Formula One, I think, that we like as fans.
Sure.
I think with regards to whether it's inevitable, ultimately that's going to be Bernie Eccleston's decision. If Bernie doesn't want there to be a closed cockpit, trust me, there won't be one. If he wants there to be a closed cockpit, there'll be one. Bernie is the man in that sport, and even, you know, with regards to safety and everything like that, the final decision will run through him.
And it'll all be about the show, so maybe there is hope. Yeah. Indeed. Okay, I mean, the thing that makes me angry is that Pastor Maldonado... And poor old Pastor, he does seem to come up quite regularly in these things. But at Spa last year, he drove his car into Lewis because he was a bit annoyed and didn't get any kind of sanction like that. And I think that's more dangerous than what we could argue is a racing incident. But there we go. And I have got a note here. My terribly poor notes for our preview to the second half of the season missed out the fact that Pastor Maldonado during the summer drove his Williams in a demo at Caracas and drove it straight into a curb and totaled it after a lap and a half.
Did we not talk about that? I think we may have brought it up
while we were sort of, you know, shooting the stuff beforehand.
Yeah, I don't know if we got it onto the tape.
I'm not sure if we made it into the final.
I did just want to mention that, because that was the highlight probably.
It is utterly hilarious.
Ridiculous.
I do like how Sky replayed his crash in HD on live television, which I thought was quite comical.
Probably necessary. Anyway, the carnage of the accident on the first corner was, of course, Roman Lewis and Fernando Alonso out of the race, all safely out of the race, it has to be said, but all out nonetheless. It opened it up completely, but ultimately probably made no difference to the final result. Jenson Button, who I believe you tipped to have a good second half of the season just last week, David, he was superb. Dare I say, a lot like he was in Melbourne at the start of the season, and whether it's a kind of... He just likes getting going again, I don't know, but...
I'd say better than Melbourne, definitely. But it's typical Jensen. When he's on it, he's on it. When he's not, he's not. So he was untouchable on the Saturday and didn't have to try very hard on the Sunday because no one had the pace that he had. So he's able to just cruise.
It was interesting, Lewis Hamilton's interview afterwards, because he didn't want to comment on the accident, which I think is probably because he was very annoyed. He squared up pretty much to Roman immediately after the race. He was also sporting a terrible beard. I don't know what he was trying to do there, but it's obviously in its formative stages, but one can only wonder how that's going to look like at Singapore in a few weeks' time.
For everyone listening who may wonder why Michael's brought that up, we are three bearded gentlemen who sit before you. So we appreciate the finer points of a well-manicured face fuzz.
Yeah.
And I don't, just to clear up why people may wonder why you're talking about a man's beard.
Indeed.
Just,
like,
let the people who can only hear us know that we're actually three strikingly good-looking men with beards.
Yeah, you can say that, yeah. I think... yeah, it was just the sort of halfway house of Lewis. I mean, there was intention there to have some cultivated beard moustache linkage, but it just wasn't. It may be a little bit too soon. He should have kept his balaclava on. I think that's what I'm saying. But just for now, maybe. But anyway, the point probably is that he would have looked on at that and thought, if only in a way, I suppose. Clearly, the McLaren. I mean, are these things a one off? I know it's been difficult to predict it, but I suppose, does it just vary from race weekend to race weekend? And, you know, Lotus or Ferrari could be doing exactly the same in Monza.
I don't think I'd want to predict anything this season because you just don't know. You know, it's it seems not almost haphazard in the way that the results sort of seem to come to various drivers. So, yeah, it could be McLaren at Monza, could be, I don't know, could be a Marussia for everyone at the moment.
Oh, Charles Peak. Charles Peak.
I don't think it's necessarily... you know, it's a case of who could do what. I think that also part of the reason Lewis may have been a bit dejected was his choice to reject the new rear wing that McLaren brought to the circuit that Jensen ultimately went with, and you could see it, you know, paying dividends because of obviously there's no running that they could have had on the Friday because it was a complete washout. You know, Lewis made the call. I haven't had enough time with it. I don't think I'll get the right telemetry. I'm you know, we're not going to be able to read enough data. So he went with what he knew. Jensen took a risk, and as you know, as David said, he was on top form, and he was on it. It obviously paid off. And there were a couple of interviews throughout the weekend where you could hear that Lewis was just a little bit annoyed with himself for making that call. But there's nothing to say that if he hadn't got shunted out of the first corner, that he may not have challenged. We don't know that, and we'll never know that, which is a shame. But it's obvious that McLaren have made strides.
Yeah, the telemetry that Lewis was looking at over, he obviously shared with everyone else as well, didn't he? There was a story today about a picture he popped up on Twitter.
Yeah,
McLaren loved that.
Which
yeah,
does
I
happen.
Did, I did see that because it appeared in my Instagram feed. And
did you keep a copy of it?
No.
No, I think it's gone now, hasn't
no,
it?
No, there are copies on the internet.
Are there?
The
sure
internet
there
never,
I'm sure
don't,
there are.
The internet doesn't forget anything.
No. As Martin Whitmarsh mentioned, I think. He just got a sort of a telling off, didn't he, really,
yeah.
Lewis? Is that about right?
Yeah, what Martin Whitmarsh was quite good about it, I think. I think they're kind of treating Lewis with sort of kid gloves a little bit. He hasn't signed another contract, so they're probably kind of thinking, well, I think he's going to stay, but let's not try and annoy him. You know, let's tell him that, you know, that's not correct behaviour, but let's not have a go at him and get him to, you know, go off in a huff.
Christian Horner, of course, team principal at Red Bull, thinks that they would have been much, much sterner with their drivers
yes,
if they've done it.
Yeah.
I'm sure
but they could probably afford to be.
Classic. He's just helping the situation, Christian.
But isn't that like going to a children's party and saying to the host of the children's party when their child gets out of line, oh, I'd never let my kids act up like that? I mean, aren't you just trying to rile them up a little bit?
Of course.
There's nothing serious.
He loves it. He loves it.
It's all politics.
Exactly. All right, then. Well, good old Jensen. Title contender still. He's not giving up on it. And he's certainly a lot closer now than he was 4 days ago.
Mathematically eliminated, I think, is the term Jensen used over the weekend. He is going to continue to fight for the title until it's mathematically impossible for him to attain it. And if at the moment, if and when that happens, he said he'll put all of his support behind helping Lewis win it if Lewis still has a shot.
But there is mathematical elimination, but there's also practical elimination as well. Is he practically eliminated, or can he win it?
I think if he shows the performances that he showed over the weekend, I think there's no doubt that he can win it. I think he'd certainly be in the mix. It would take a lot of bad luck for Ferrari. It would take a lot of good luck for McLaren and good driving for McLaren. But, I mean, when anyone is driving as well as Jensen drove over that weekend, you've got to consider them one of the top drivers in the world. I mean, we didn't have a chance to see him battle it out and see how Fernando Alonso would have done. But, you know, you take advantage of what's in front of you. You've got to be on the track to win the race.
I don't think that if those guys had crashed out, I don't think they would have been able to battle with him anyway. I think the result for Jensen would have been the same. He would have just disappeared off. It's just how the rest of the field would have you know, ended up. And Alonso going out, with Hamilton going out, and Webber not doing quite so well, it's kind of made things a bit more interesting for the title. You know, Alonso hasn't scored any points, so that, you know, the gap that Jensen was able to claw back is, you know, that much smaller. I don't think he's not capable of winning the World Championship, but I don't think he's got the chances. I think that gap is too big. But if he becomes Jensen of 2011, then I think he'll be in with a very good chance. Because the difference between this year and last year is you haven't got one sole, you know, dominant person. Yes, Alonso is in the lead, and yes, he's doing very well, but he's not the sole dominant person. It's being divvied up between lots of different drivers. So if that can carry on the way it's going, and Jensen can get lots of seconds and thirds and, you know, a few more wins, then, yeah, maybe it might be close.
Might be close. Should we have some tweets? Some people who got in touch with me on Twitter at Michael J. Bailey, AD Barbs, just on the Spa weekend. This is not quite sure what Roman was up to, but a nice drive by Button, he says. I think we'd all concur. Jay Pippin, odd that RG, which is of course Roman, has been made the fall guy. Compare him to Pasta, and the penalty is harsh. Repeat offender versus one over eager start. And Kev Yell, 1-2-3, punishment for RG, totally justified, was a bad mistake by him. Maldonado false start was comical, Button looked magnificent. We hadn't mentioned Pastor Maldonado's
jump start. Think he's taken enough punishment Pastor, so far? Do you not think he's taken enough of a bashing in our podcast?
Just watch it again.
It was outstanding. He was up by the Ferrari before Lewis had even engaged. And actually, watching the replays of that start as Pastor came shooting past, one of the things that my friend who I was watching the race with noticed, Fernando Alonso starts the race with no hands on his steering wheel. Fernando Alonso starts the race with his hands down here, and his car is in motion before he puts his hands
Fantastic.
On his steering wheel.
That is brilliant.
I mean, that is just so cash, isn't it? Mm. But Maldonado's start, I mean, you know, everyone's got to jump. He's jumped.
Well, yeah, of course he had. He'd started moving before the HRTs had lined up at the back.
Charlie Whiting, who set them all away, he's shaking his head before they've all gone past, going, yeah. Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's quite funny it took them so long to record it.
To be fair, they did have a lot to deal with in those first few laps with the crash and getting everything sorted, so you're kind of going to turn your attention to some silly little jump start after everyone's made sure we're all okay there. But yeah, no, it was absolutely hilarious. I'm waiting for the end of the season so someone ultimately more talented than myself on computers can put together a blooper reel of Maldonado and set it to the Benny Hill music. I think it'll be outstanding.
Well, I think I've mentioned it before, there is a video on YouTube if you search for it just from the first race of the season that is entitled Super Maldonado Kart with the music and bananas flying out the back of the Williams and all sorts.
Do it. Okay, shall we look a little bit further down from Jensen and what happened behind? I want to focus primarily on Hethel-backed Lotus, but let's just touch, shall we, on Sebastian Vettel, because he was very good, I thought. Very quick.
Very, very good, I thought, as well. he demonstrated something that he very rarely demonstrates, the fact that he can actually race. I know last year he won a lot of races and he got a lot of poles, but he didn't really race last year. He just sort of led and dominated a lot of the time. But today I thought, you know, it's cracking overtaking manoeuvres. Mm. And, you know, a really good strategy and good management of tyres, but aggressiveness. You know, he was a complete package today, I thought, and very, very good.
It's really enjoyable to see him racing like that as well, isn't it? That's the thing. He does it with some sort of panache. I do love Seb when he's in that form. And he's now within 25 points of Alonso.
Yeah, he's vaulted himself into second place, and hats off to him and the way he did it and where he had to come from on the grid as well. It did make me chuckle that he found his sweet spot on the track where he would go down just before the final chicane. And obviously where he got into a bit of a tangle with Michael Schumacher before going into the pit lane. But that little sweet spot, go down, cut down the inside, keep level with the car, and as the car turns back to the left, you're already on the inside to take the line straight on the straight, start-finish straight. Amazing performance, especially considering you could see how ineffectual the DRS zone was for both Red Bulls. They had a real hard time using that technology to their advantage. You could hear them bouncing on the limiter, but as their technical director has come out and said, you know, we've gone for higher downforce, it makes us better in the middle sector. That's what we're after. We're after that speed, and, you know, the DRS, no problem. And Seb showed that it can work.
Which is why Spa is probably my favourite track of the season. And if they ever get rid of it, I will be livid.
Well, it's safe for now, as far as I'm aware.
Indeed, yes. Well, they've signed a new contract for a few years.
Several, I think. Yeah.
That's close enough. That's fine.
Look it up if you want to know.
Indeed, that's the way. Okay, so Lotus, Kimi finished third. There was one great overtake up Eau Rouge.
2 years in a row we've been spoiled with overtakes in Eau Rouge. I think if it doesn't happen next year, I may be a little bit upset. But, I mean, you can't seriously expect someone to try a passing manoeuvre going up a hill of that gradient flat out after coming out of La Source, can you? Can you really expect
Bending
that?
Bending round to the right.
Exactly, yeah, and can, yet there yeah, we have. Can. But my favourite part of that was in the green room at the end, just before they went onto the podium, and Seb turns to Kimi and he says to him, did you have a bit of a battle with Michael? Like, he didn't know because it was all going on like around him, but he wasn't involved. He said, did you have a bit of a battle with Michael? And Kimi's face just said it all. I mean, if you saw it, then you'll know what I'm talking about. But Kimi with the rolled eyes and the puffed out just face, like, it said it everything. That was a real fight with Michael Schumacher. But then in the end, he just sort of shrugged it off as if to say, yeah, you know, but I got by him, so what? You know, it was classic Kimi. But it was, and him and Schumacher were in a really, really good battle there. And but that move that he pulled on him going into Eau Rouge was electric.
He didn't win. Lotus didn't win. That is, we're pretty standard. I'm obviously still sulking.
Didn't we all
I'm
gonna predict?
Have to, I think we, Kimi in solidarity, up. I think yeah, we predicted yeah. Kimi would.
I think he found out, and in his effort to prove all aspects of the media wrong, he just decided.
I think he's doing it to spite us. Yeah, so that is definitely
yeah
true.
I think that's basically
it. He is now fourth in the driver's standings. Lotus are third in the Constructors' Championship. It's going nicely, isn't it, Kimi?
Yeah, I think you know he's still well in the hunt. He needs to get a win soon if he's going to stand any chance of being world champion again. But you know, it's we keep saying it, but it appears inevitable that at some point he will get it right, and it will all click together, and you know he'll get that elusive victory. But yeah, so far so good, I think, for the Iceman.
I'm closing in on saying it's not inevitable. Actually, that it's inevitable they won't win, which probably means they will at that point. That point when I say it, it might like, just be before Brazil.
Kind of like your version of the commentator's curse.
Pretty much, that, yeah. The pod curse.
Oh, I like that. That was not rehearsed.
He just came up with that. Yeah, that was a
witness
fluke,
to invention
a
right there.
Good on Lotus then. As always, we'll mention Caterham 2, who are Hingham backed rather than Hingham based these days, but wasn't a great weekend for them. Vitaly Petrov came home 14th, which in terms of basic result isn't too bad. It is quite demoralising when Mark Smith is interviewed before the race, or before qualifying I think it was, asked whether anything will be any different, and he said no, this will be exactly like all the other races. We haven't got any kind of improvement on where we will be, which I suppose speaks volume for their position at the moment. The only thing I would mention is probably Heikki Kovalainen's unsafe release from the pit stop, effectively sending him into the back of Kartikeyan and costing him €10,000.
Which was an absolute shame, though, because up until that point, Heikki was running fairly well. Heikki was in the mix. I mean, obviously, the crash at the start, I hate to say the word helped, but it did help him get up to the front. It was instrumental in him gaining those places. But he was actually running fairly solidly, was in the pits. I'm not going to say he was in the hunt for some points, because we all know there were a lot of faster cars behind him, but could have been in line for a very strong finish. And then that, having to have his nose replaced in the pits, and that obviously cut a lot of time out of his track, and who knows if it was ever the same again after that. But it was a real shame.
They're the frustrating ones, I suppose, aren't they, David? Because those races when there are a lot of retirements, they're the ones where you really want to be taking advantage and not making mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, just look at Spa historically. You know, people like Jordan have managed to win when you know people have crashed out. You've got to kind of take advantage of that. I think, unfortunately for Caterham, I mean, they were up to 10th, but they got mugged on the straight in the DRS zone. I think even actually before the DRS even switched on, people were just breezing past. They have no straight line performance. But now Kovalainen, I think, after that pit stop, he had a bit of a mare, to be honest, because he, I think I saw at least two separate occasions on the coverage where he spun off, either sort of having a bit of a tank slapper or actually going right the way round. Which is odd for Kovalainen, because he's normally has a really good, really solid race, and does sort of probably slightly outperform that Caterham car. So you know, to see him have a bit of a poor one is quite a shocker, really.
Maybe just shaking off the rust then ahead after the summer break. We'll put it down to that. Okay, I realise time is getting away, actually. It's taken a bit longer to get here than... I'm out of practice. It's been my own second half of the season, rustiness. Right. So let's try and keep it quick, if we can, gentlemen. Highlight of the race. And also, what happened to Mark Webber?
Let me consult.
Who knows? Good Lord.
Well, it did just one of those weekends where it didn't quite happen for him, I suppose.
Yeah. Sixth overall, I think, was his position. And he did okay, but just sort of, he was one of those people that when you're watching the coverage, you see him being overtaken, and you see him in the mix, but he didn't really do anything, so he just had a fairly quiet race.
It's very frustrating though, isn't it, when Seb is obviously getting more out of the same car.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's going to be variation in setups, they're not going to run exactly the same kind of thing, but it really is odd. As David said, he's just literally fizzled out of everyone's view on that race. I mean, yeah, he suffered a grid place penalty. Fair enough. That's, you know, for qualifying, it's dropped him back a little bit. But, you know, not a terrible race. I think it's when you look at the names that are ahead of him that you think, oh, well, hang on, what went wrong there? You know, Felipe Massa and Nico Hülkenberg both coming in ahead of Mark Webber this season. You certainly wouldn't expect that. And, you know, obviously, I don't think anything particularly went wrong. I just think that just as much didn't go right.
Fair enough. Okay, then, highlight, gents. Should we just say Kimi's overtake on Eau Rouge, or...?
For me, it's Kimi's overtake on Eau Rouge, and if you watch the BBC coverage, it was David Coulthard's vocabulary, which included topography. Absolutely brilliant. He said that the fans were sitting on the natural banks. That, of course, is not bleachers. That's natural topography.
What a dude. There you go. Well,
there were some more gems
in
there. There were some more gems in there. But yeah, it was DC made that day for me.
They did. I loved when they showed the much-played footage of Coulthard being taken out by Schumacher, and obviously the altercation that followed, and then the Jordan's win, all thanks to David Coulthard. driving as well. David, your highlight?
My button bias is going to come out
Kick in right now.
It was the fact that he dominated so much that he was able to have a bit of fun on the straight before he stuck into the pits, you know, a little bit of a wheel spin, a little bit of a wiggle, you know, and left some rubber on the tarmac because he was that excited. So yeah, just seeing Button win again was probably my highlight.
That was almost the only time we saw him, wasn't it, for the race, I think, pretty much.
Well, that and when he had his pit stop. That was it.
Quiet, yeah. Okay, driver, team, Force India had a very good weekend. Well, let's say Nico Hülkenberg did. I think Paul de Resta seemed quite down at the end of it. He had no DRS and was
He managed to get some points, but, you know, or a point, should I say.
But anyway, yes, driver.
Driver's got to go to Seb Vettel. Carved up through the ranks, showed what he can do when he actually turns it on and wants to overtake people, and not just with the finesse that we've seen from Seb before, because I kind of think of Seb as a finesse driver, you know, very smooth, but he was bullish at times as well. There was a wonderful moment, I think it was his second overtake going into the last chicane, and he deliberately, as he turned out of the right-hander, cut across, making more towards the pit lane, and he forced, I cannot remember for the life of me who he was overtaking, but he forced them wide, I think it may have been a Williams, forced them wide, and then he cut down the inside straight. But it was that little kick, just a little bit, right, I'm coming round you, and then he put the car in front of them just to make them think extra, and then bolted down the straight. I mean, Seb was on absolute form.
Brilliant. David?
Seb, definitely driver of the day for me. Everything that Perry said is spot on. He was fantastic. I don't think there's anyone else really, apart from Button maybe, that you could give a driver of the day to. I've just thought of another highlight of the weekend, which you just reminded me of, was the battle between Vettel and Schumacher, when Vettel got past and then Schumacher was like, right, we'll go to the pits now. So all of that work that Vettel had made to get past him was then undone by the fact that he had to back off because Schumacher just peeled off into the pits. That was probably more comedy moment rather than highlight.
Brilliant stuff.
Made him work for it as well, didn't he?
Mm.
Yeah. Team?
Team. It's difficult because a lot of the teams didn't have half of their drivers on the track.
Well, I would give mine, yeah, which as Toro Rosso.
Damn,
I think
right.
Jean-Éric Vergne and Daniel Ricciardo. I've got to pronounce it properly. Not Ricciardo. What was that about?
Well, that's how he says it.
I know that's how he says it, but he gets it wrong.
Yeah.
Real genuine pace from Toro Rosso. Which is not in keeping with the rest of the season.
Toro Rosso was my pick for team of the weekend as well. Two consistent points finishes. They got their guys up there. And obviously in a race where the back markers are more likely to get taken out in that first corner, they navigated that really well. They navigated the safety car really well. Good strategy, solid performance. But the best part of it for me was this is a team who are in the mid-card. They would have expected to be higher up this year. They're still, in my opinion, sitting behind Sauber and Force India in their performance, and they let their guys race. And you could see that all the way around the track when those two were line astern, and there were moments where one was trying to overtake the other, or they were going around back markers. Ricciardo tried a little cheeky one up the inside when Vern was trying to take it past a back marker, and that was absolutely fantastic. That you could see a team that obviously is not dominant, they're not making the progress they'd like to make, but they're still going to let their guys go out there and leave it all on the track. And for me, that's why they get team of the week for me this week.
There you go.
Well, I won't be boring and agree with you then, because I was going to. but I'd probably say, bizarrely, Sauber would be my second team of the week, so therefore my current team of the week. Just because the reason that they weren't up the front wasn't anything to do with them. They were very, very unlucky. Perez got taken out in the first corner, and Kobayashi was also heavily damaged that corner, had to replace a wing, and ended up with a gargantuan hole in the side of the car. So, you know, their performance on Saturday, I think, is enough to give them some serious credit. And they weren't there by fluke. That was raw pace. You know, there wasn't a case that people sort of missed the, you know, missed their slot, and they were, you know, making mistakes and stuff. They were just on it, as was Maldonado, despite the fact that he blocked someone and then had to lose his place. But okay.
just the usual run-of-the-mill qualifying session for Pasta. Brilliant stuff. Let's touch briefly on GP2, and it will be quite brief. What I would like to say is that Marcus Ericsson picked up his first victory for iSport in the feature race. He also picked up fourth in Sunday's sprint, so he's having a very good second half of the GP2 campaign. James Calado was probably the most consistent of our troop for Lotus GP. He had a second and a third, and he sits third in the driver's standings behind Davide Valsecchi and Luis Razia, who are on 204 points apiece at the top of the driver's standings. So it's going to be fascinating how those two finish the season. There are just two rounds to go, Monza and Singapore, and of course Razia and Valsecchi are both driving for Caterham Racing last year, and I know a few raised eyebrows and wry smiles are floating around Hingham. Caterham Racing didn't have a great weekend of it. Guido van der Garde's fifth on the Saturday was their highlight, and they are seventh in the team standings, 4 points behind iSport in sixth, Lotus well ahead in that lot. And the penultimate round is at Monza with the Formula One boys this coming weekend, which is what we should also talk about now, gents, very quickly. Monza, it's a classic circuit, it's a power circuit, and it's one of those where cars seem to end up on the in the tires and on the in the gravel traps and in the garages before not too long. What are we expecting? And I suppose we should have a prediction, shouldn't we? And then we will end it.
Crikey. You're expecting cars with fantastic straight line speed to be dominant. So that's not the Red Bulls. Although every time we try and write the Red Bulls off and say they're not going to perform particularly well at a track, they always come back and find a way to do it. That is the inhuman genius of Adrian Newey, that I think he's actually a comic book supervillain, just missed his calling in life. Also home soil for the Ferraris. Alonso missed this race, he's not going to want to miss another one. I would expect to see Fernando Alonso come out of the gate storming, but I'm actually going to go a little bit crazy here, and I'm going to predict Michael Schumacher for the win.
That is fairly crazy.
We know how ridiculously fast that Monza track is, we know how ridiculously fast that Mercedes car is, and we know that he knows his way around Monza from a lot of years driving for that Ferrari team. So he'll know his way around that track, and he's got the power and the pace to do it, and he showed this weekend that he's got the speed and the get up and go. I mean, I would argue that it was only a pit stop strategy error that left him where he was down the field, otherwise he could have been challenging for a podium as far as I was concerned.
I like your logic there. I might be tempted to go for Rosberg.
Ooh, see,
just even more ridiculous in a way. I might do that.
So I think Rosberg has faded off into the distance now, and it's Schumacher is the faster Mercedes driver, I would say, at the moment, even though the points would disagree.
He's one for just doing something out of the blue, though, isn't he, Nico? You've forgotten about him, and all of a sudden he's like, oh yeah, there he is. Yeah. He is good.
By the way, hi, I'm a really talented driver. Yeah,
that's going to exist.
Go on then, dude.
I'm going to go Button again.
That was what I was going to say before we said
going for the Renaissance. I like it.
Back-to-back wins.
Yeah, back-to-back wins, maybe. If not, maybe Hamilton. I know Hamilton is quick, but I think maybe one of the McLarens. They do look epically fast in the straight line. Lotus aren't going to be using their double DRS, so we can't expect them to have any kind of added performance that we have.
And it would all hinge on Kimi anyway, because Roman ain't going to be there.
Exactly. But I think McLaren, I think they're faster than straight line. I think they're faster than the double DRS Mercedes as well. I think
McLaren front row
with their new rear wing.
McLaren on pole.
Yeah, I'd say if it was going to be another pole, it probably wouldn't be Button though.
Lewis on pole. Lewis on pole, Jensen to win.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
That's what you just said, David. I'm just repeating what you said.
What a weekend. What a weekend.
Well, we can look forward to it. It's good to have Formula One back, I must admit. It's a cracking race on Sunday. We've got another one, I'm sure, in store at Monza. Keep in touch with all the Lotus Caterham news at edp24.co.uk/F1, where you can also find my weekly Formula One column, which appears in Wednesday's Eastern Daily Press. You can get hold of us all on Twitter. Please do. I am at Michael J. Bailey. Perry.
I am at PedHD56.
And David.
At Gridwalk.
There you go, get it up. That's the way. Brilliant stuff. I think that just about does it. You can get a hold of the podcast on iTunes. You can subscribe to us there, leave ratings, whatever it is. I've never been a big one on that, but you can do those sort of things if you wish. Have a lovely rest of the week, and we will be back post Monza. Bye bye for now.